Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Do you want to get your message heard? With low advertising rates and great sponsorship opportunities, Sheffield Live can help you reach thousands of local people. Get your campaign on Sheffield Live. To find out more about advertising on Sheffield Live, write to advertising@sheffieldlive.org or call 0114 281 4082. Do you like Sheffield Live?
Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield. Made by you.
Do you want to get your message heard? With low advertising rates and great sponsorship opportunities, Sheffield Live can help you reach thousands of local people. Get your campaign on Sheffield Live. To find out more about advertising on Sheffield Live, write to advertising@sheffieldlive.org or call 0114 281 4082. Do you like Sheffield Live? Why not become a friend of Sheffield Live? Sheffield Live is a community radio station, and Friends of Sheffield Live are people in the community who make a regular donation to keep Sheffield Live on the air. Join the Friends of Sheffield Live by writing to friends@sheffieldlive.org or go online to sheffieldlive.org/friends.
Are you a keen Sheffield Live listener? Do you want to get involved? Sheffield Live is a community radio station, and it gets better when you take part. Contact us to find out how you can be part of Sheffield's newest radio station. Call us on 281-4092 or email us on info@sheffieldlive.org. 93.2 FM, Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
This is Sheffield Live.
This is Communities Live.
Because at that time the housing was cheaper.
I know it's not a big city centre, but there's still quite a few shops that quite like it.
Dog and Partridge on Trippitt Lane every other Thursday.
I love the green room just for like acoustic nights.
This is Communities Live.
It's a very big question, isn't it?
We have a diverse society in Sheffield.
I like all the art sculptures.
It's friendly, there's a lot to do.
I really like the Peace Gardens. I like all the little fountains and little areas that you can just sit out and chill in.
Sheffield is a very nice city.
This is Communities Live.
I love Sheffield, yes. Love it. Been here 17 years.
I like Sheffield because the people are very friendly.
This is a large student community, so it makes it like very lively, very vibrant city in that regard, and also very multicultural, no?
And we love the Sheffield people.
Everything, the city, the nature, the outside of Sheffield, it's lovely. Great place.
Yeah, this is the poet Benjamin Zephaniah coming down your radio wire, and you are listening to Sheffield Live on 93.2 FM, my friend.
Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to Communities Live here at Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. How is everybody doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah. I'm all right, thank you. Thank you, Bradley, for joining me today. And we also got a new presenter here joining us today.
Hello.
We've got Lewis. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me. Very excited to be here.
So, well, thank you for joining me. So, tell us how you found Sheffield Live. How did you get involved with it?
Well, I've known about Sheffield Live for years and years now. I've looked to get involved a few times in the past, but then things haven't quite lined up. And then luckily I got to meet Oliver, who you guys know very well recently. And, you know, we got to chatting. He mentioned he did this and I said I'd love to get involved. And then here we are. And yeah, it's very exciting. The studio looks fantastic. And yeah, I'm just excited to be involved. It feels great.
Well, we're excited to have you involved, mate. And thank you for coming as well. I mean, so what kind of interest, what are your main interests? Tell us, what do you like?
Well, like a cliche mid-20s man, I am big on my gaming, big on my films. I've just recently started getting into boxing, just kind of the exercise part. I have no desire to get punched in the face at all, but I do find it a lot of fun. Yeah, but mainly kind of gaming, films. I study writing at university, so I like to pretend that I do writing in my free time. I haven't done it that much for a while, but I'm looking to get back into it. And yeah, well, now radio might be on the top of that list, so we'll see.
And what's your favourite games? You say you're a gamer, what games do you play?
So, controversially, because I know they've fallen off a bit, I'm a diehard Assassin's Creed fan. Absolutely right. Adore them. I'll admit, a lot of them aren't great, or not fantastic, but yeah. I do love them. And Alan Wake and the whole Remedy kind of universe has been a big fan of mine as well.
And what's your favourite Assassin's Creed game? If you could pick one, which one
would it be? If I could pick one, probably Black Flag. It's same just the classic.
Same for me,
yeah. Absolute classic.
You know, I think we're all universal on that one. I mean, that is a classic, one of the best games. I also like the second one as well, Ezio Auditore, is it something like that?
Yeah.
It's a very funny name to pronounce, but yeah, that was a good one. And I think that was the one that actually started the franchise, even though there was... the first one was all right. It wasn't the best one, but the second one really improved it.
Yeah, they found their footing a lot with that one.
And I mean, Black Flag, I mean, with the pirates, I mean, with Blackbeard, that was one of the best ones as well. And like you say, I do agree, I think it has fallen a little bit off, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I mean, they're in the middle of making a new one as well. Apparently, it's going to be with the... this is rumour-wise, by the way, with the Holy Roman Empire.
Yeah, right. I think it might be set in Germany, but I'm not 100% sure on that.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. And it's apparently, it's going to be the darkest Assassin's Creed there is. And it's going to involve witchcraft and stuff like that. So that'll be interesting, I think.
Yeah, I mean, when you're 16 or however many entries in, you've really got to start trying some new stuff. And I'm all for it. You know, if they go all in with it and stick the landing, then I say fantastic.
Yeah. And what would you say about Alan Wake 2? I mean, have you played Alan Wake 2?
I have. I don't quite like it as much as the first one, but I think it's fantastic at what it does. It is genuinely quite creepy. I don't really play horror games that often, but I like to make an exception for a few of them. And, you know, I was sat in my room late at night with my headphones on going through it, and I think I woke up everyone else in the house by screaming a couple of times, so that shows it did its job well, I think.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe you can tell me, actually, because, I've got Alan Wake too.
Yeah.
And... I don't know, I think this is my opinion, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, but it felt a lot slow. It was like a murder mystery.
It was a bit slow.
And not only that, it felt overly long as well, like they were trying to make up for all those years that they lost with making the sequel, because, it felt overly long, but it didn't need to be that long, I don't think.
Yeah, no, I do get that. It is quite long. One of the things which I felt kind of helped with the pacing, though, is that you could switch between the two characters once you had unlocked them. So there was Alan from the first game and then Saga, who kind of had the more detective-y angle of the first game. And I thought having that ability to switch between the two did help with the pacing. You know, if you're getting a bit too bored of all the detective stuff, you can go more down the horror angle. And then, you know, vice versa. If, like me, it's 3 a.m. and you're too scared to do another horror level, you can go into the detective stuff. But it is quite a slow burn, definitely. I think that's one of the things I liked about it, but I can see why it would be off-putting.
I mean, it's not off-putting. I wouldn't say off-putting. I mean, it just felt... I don't know, I felt the pacing was all over the place. But saying that, it kind of reminded me of I don't know if you know the TV show, Twin Peaks.
Of course.
It kind of reminded me of Twin Peaks, because that's kind of got like the Alan Wake kind of vibes to it, I think.
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, David Lynch is an inspiration to so many people, and Remedy Entertainment certainly take him as a big inspiration. In fact, you can even hear a lot of the songs from David Lynch films used across their games.
Yes,
so in Alan Wake 1, they have songs that play at the end of each chapter. And one of them is In Dreams by Roy Orbison, which is used quite famously in Blue Velvet in this kind of big cathartic scene. So I think, you know, they would love to be compared to David Lynch. So, yeah. Fantastic.
And, I mean, they also made another game which is based on... they're making, like, a universe now with Alan Wake. And I think it's Control. Is it Control that they're making?
Yeah.
I mean, have you ever played Control? And if you have, what do you think to it?
I thought it was great. It's quite different to Alan Wake in how it plays. You know, it's a lot more action-y, which I like. It keeps the pace going. I didn't find the setting quite as to my appeal. It's still very interesting, and there's a lot of cool stuff about it. But I don't think I enjoy it quite as much as the Alan Wake games. However, the new one coming out does look fantastic, and I'll definitely be getting it when it does release.
I mean, I want to put two and two together. I want to put them in the same universe. I mean, but I think it remains to be seen how they're going to do that, really, because the two, they contrast each other, really, because they're two different. One's more sci-fi. Control is more sci-fi, and Alan Wake is more horror, I think.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be interesting how they're going to put two and two together, really.
Yeah. How I think it works a lot of the time is they like to keep things really vague. And by, you know, doing that and letting the audience fill in a lot of the blanks, you can almost imagine the connections a bit more. So, you know, they don't have to directly say this influenced this and stuff like that. But if you're a fan of both games, you might be able to make a few little connections going on with it. Which I quite like, you know, in my writing class, we learnt about kind of hard world building and soft world building, and this would definitely fall into the soft category.
Yes.
But I kind of prefer it a bit more, you know, it gives the audience a bit more participation in it, I think.
And, I mean, is there any other games that you're currently looking forward to coming out this year?
I mean, there's the big one everyone's excited for, GTA 6.
Of course. You know what? Everybody's been talking about it.
I'm excited for it.
And do you know what? I mean, do you feel... you know, this is going to sound controversial saying this. I mean, I hope it comes out this year.
Yes.
But do you think there's going to be a possible delay that might... But I think if it's delayed, I think it makes it for a better product, really.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, if they delay it again, I say just delay it for as long as you need to. It's been like 12, 13 years since the last one. I can wait another year or two, as long as it's good.
And I think it's going to be great, but I mean, it's like GTA 5. I mean, that is still, as of today, the top selling game that's being sold and still being played today.
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, it's coming out for Xbox 360, PlayStation 3. Oh, well, pretty much every single platform you can think of. And I was surprised that we didn't do any story DLC for it, but I think we were more focused on doing the online component to it than the campaign stuff, really, because I think GTA 4 released two story DLCs. And I think they were in the making of making DLC for GTA 5, but they've changed it and made it onto GTA Online instead.
I think that's because they've realised that GTA Online makes them a lot more money, I think, like with the shark card and stuff.
But, I mean, have you ever played Red Dead Redemption as well, too?
I actually am more of a fan of the Red Dead series than I am of GTA. I love GTA to death, but I think Red Dead is a little bit more my kind of cup of tea.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I love Red Dead to death. I haven't actually played any of the online for it, but the single player, fantastic.
Well, you know, I was just going to say, the single player is absolutely spot on. I mean,
it's amazing.
It's one of the best games out there. However, for the online part, I mean, I felt the content was lacking. And the reason why I say that is because I thought we were going to be a bit more content, like, I thought we were going to be a bit more support like we did with the GTA Online. But I think we were more focused on making more content with GTA Online than Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah, I mean, well, GTA Online, it must just be an enormous cash cow for them. I mean, the fact that it's been, like, 12 years since the online section release, and it's still racking in.
They're still milking it, aren't
they? Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, the people are still drinking the milk, so, yeah, you know, it's working out well for them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's supposed to be based on the... Well, like, based on Bonnie and Clyde, is that right? From what I heard, rumour-wise?
Kinda, yeah. I see what you... Yeah, I love GTA 6, I see what you mean. Yeah.
And, I mean, there's another big game that I'm looking forward to that's coming out tomorrow. Are you a massive Resident Evil fan?
I've never actually played a Resident Evil, you know. Right. I am intrigued by them. But, like I said, I think I'm a bit too much of a wimp when it comes to horror games a lot of the time. I've got Alien Isolation, and I'm about 20% into the story, and I can't imagine that changing anytime soon. But Resident Evil does intrigue me a lot.
Well, Alien Isolation I've completed, and it's a great game, but I'm not spoiling it for you. There is a sequel coming out soon as well. We're making a sequel to it.
Oh, fantastic.
It's took them about 10 years to actually get it green-lighted. But I don't think it's about time. But it's also, I mean... It's one of the best games out there, but it's also underrated because a lot of press was giving it stick, really, because they gave it like 5s out of 10s, and it was way above that, and it's one of the greatest games I've ever played, I think.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes critics and audiences just don't mesh, I guess. Maybe they need to find reviewers who might be more invested in that type of genre or the universe around it. But, yeah, I agree. I saw a lot of the similar kind of press. Yeah. But then when you actually look at audience scores, it really is through the roof a lot of the time.
I mean, and also another thing as well is that a lot of people are comparing, instead of playing the game itself, they're more comparing about graphics. Do you think graphics is just important as playing the game itself, you think?
Well, I wouldn't say it's as important as the gameplay itself. I do think... graphics are often either heralded as the most important part or not relevant whatsoever. And I don't think either of those are particularly true.
Yeah.
I will say, I will find myself watching videos online of games just because the graphics are pretty.
Yeah.
Particularly, you know, if they've got a good art style that utilises it. But I think good graphics are always going to be, you know, something which draw people in. But a lot of good games which kind of have not amazing graphics or not a particularly... Yeah. memorable art style can still go far just off their gameplay.
Yeah. And what do you think, Brad? I mean, I'm just to say a question of what I've just asked Lewis, sorry, what do you feel about graphics over gameplay?
I think graphics do play a part, but I don't think it's the most... there are other things that are important as well as the graphics, like how well does the game handle, or like... does it perform well? Does it keep lagging out or not, sort of thing? So it's not the only... It is important, but it's not the only important thing. Yeah. There is other things to look at as well.
I mean, it's like I played a movie license game, which was Terminator Resistance, and they ripped it to pieces. But when you actually play the game, it's actually a fantastic game. It's not actually too bad. So I don't... It's like you say, I don't think the... critics are always right on, like, video games and stuff like that. I mean, we also recently made a new RoboCop game. RoboCop... is it Rogue City, something like that? It was one of the best RoboCop games I've ever played as well.
Is that the one that came out a year or two ago?
Is it Rogue City, something like that?
I'm not sure what it's called.
So, something like that. And, you know, I think... we need to start making new IPs as well, because I think old IPs now are getting done to death, unfortunately.
Yeah.
We need to have a refresh on it. And, I mean, it's like, it's a safe option, but the safe is not always the best option, is it?
Yeah. Well, when those IPs stop making money and they don't have anything else to rely on, then big studios are going to be in trouble as well, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, there is one game, and Capcom, I hope you're listening to this, because we definitely need a reboot of this. is Dino Crisis. Dino Crisis. Okay. I mean, that's the that's like the alternative version of Resident Evil, but with dinosaurs.
Fantastic.
And they need to make another game on that because a lot of people are clamoring up for it as well because we want the series back, but something is holding them back, unfortunately, with that. So hopefully, Capcom, you're listening to us and hopefully you can bring it back. What about Call of Duty?
I've never been a big multiplayer man, if I'm honest. I'm more single player. Largely that was because didn't have amazing internet growing up. So if I was to play any multiplayer games, it would be like watching a slideshow. But yeah, I do enjoy COD. I'm more into zombies as opposed to like the actual traditional local multiplayer. But yeah, never been my favourite. I do love zombies, though. I've spent many a night at a friend's house up until like 5 a.m. just trying to get past rave 30 or whatever, you know.
You know what? I'm going to pause the interview there, so we're going to just play a little song, catch our breaths a little bit, and then we'll talk a bit more about games later on. So we're going to play Duran Duran, and this is Ordinary World.
Just a little Hi, my name's Billy Bragg, and you're listening to Sheffield Live on 93.2 FM.
So, that was Duran Duran and Ordinary World. And, Lewis, I mean, you said you like Duran Duran, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a huge fan, but I've started listening to a lot of their stuff recently, or a lot of the hits, I should say.
Yes.
Interestingly enough, that song which just played, Ordinary World, is used in... I don't know if you've ever played The Evil Within, either yes. of you guys. Yes. Just because you were speaking of Resident Evil earlier, and I'm pretty sure it's the same creator. There's a great sort of horror-y version of that song used in, I can't remember if it's the first or the second one. I think it might be the second one.
Yeah.
And that's the first place I ever heard that song. And then when I listened to the new one, I was like, oh, this actually sounds a little bit happier than what I was expecting it to.
Yeah. I mean, it is the second one, and it wasn't, I don't think it was Duran Duran that song. It was so, I can't remember who the other singer was, but it was a different, creepier version of
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
And actually, it kind of suited the series well. Mm. And you know what? Speaking of the Evil Within, we need to bring that back, don't we? Because it was such a great game. I think it was so underrated, the first one, but the second one was pretty good. And I hope they make a third one, because there was I don't want to spoil too much into it, but there was a cliffhanger at the end of Evil Within 2, weren't there? And they left it open for another one.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's a cliffhanger that needs to be resolved, really, because there's still many questions that need to be answered. But I don't want to say too much about it in case anybody wants to play it, you see.
Yeah. But Tango Gameworks, if you're listening, then you've got your job now. So.
But I think Tango Gameworks been dissolved now, because I've heard rumour-wise that Xbox has shut them down now. So, So it makes you wonder who's going to take on the Evil Within series, if they aren't going to take it on.
Yeah, well, I mean, it'd be a shame to let it go, because it is a great series, and survival horror is kind of having a big resurgence at the minute, so it would make sense for them to capitalise on that, particularly because it comes from, you know, the creative mind behind such an iconic horror franchise, Resident Evil.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure The Evil Within, both of them, did make a fair bit of money, maybe not as much as Resident Evil, but it probably didn't have the same marketing push either, so that will have hurt it.
I think it's because it was a new IP as well. I mean, new IPs really don't get... I mean, unless you are giving it a big marketing campaign for it, it doesn't really bode as well as the more recent IPs that are, you know, like, say, Resident Evil or GTA 6. I mean, those are going to be your biggest games no matter what.
Yeah, I think with certain genres as well, like horror, it's a very saturated genre, particularly like indie games. You know, there's hundreds of horror indie games like Five Nights at Freddy's, Poppy's Playtime. I'm sure we can all think of loads that we've seen. So it must be a difficult market to break into unless you've got something new and special which you're kind of trying to push forward, which I think The Evil Within did have some great kind of character design and some great levels in it. But it's hard to kind of push that without spoiling too much as well, because you want it to be a nice reveal to players as they're playing. You know, you don't want someone to be playing and then you just think, oh, I could have just watched the trailer again on YouTube.
Yeah, and you know what? I think the second one is always is the best one out of the Evil Within series. I mean, first one is great, don't get me wrong, but the second one was even better. And it was just a shame that we didn't continue with it. But hopefully in the near future, never know. I want to also say, I mean, you just mentioned Five Nights at Freddy's. Have you ever seen any of the films?
I have seen the first one. I wasn't a big fan, if I'm honest.
Wasn't a big fan. No. And tell us why about what did you not like about the first one then?
It didn't feel like it kind of captured the games as much. It sort of felt a bit like they had a rough idea of what happens in the games, then just wrote a script where they could kind of fit in a couple of buzzwords and then just pushed it out. I will say, I can't remember what he's called. I think it's Matthew Lillard, the guy who plays one of the characters in the game.
Yeah.
In the film, sorry, who I won't reveal too much about, but who played Scooby-Doo, Shaggy in the Scooby-Doo live-action films. He is really fantastic in it.
Yeah.
He really sells the role well, and he was the highlight of the whole film. But other than that, I just found it a little bit boring, if I'm honest.
I'll be honest, I watched the film, and I don't want to spoil too much into it, But I don't think he got a lot of screen time, really.
No, it was
more a case of they're in this pizzeria. I think, was it a restaurant or something like that? Mm. And it's like they were more focused on the him being a security guard and all these animatronics coming to life, really.
Yeah.
And we needed to have a bit more background, I think. And also, I didn't think the horror was that great as well. We needed to up the horror, really.
No, yeah, it wasn't particularly scary. I mean, they were probably trying to find a balance of marketing it to more family audiences as well, which might have limited the options. But when you actually play the game, it doesn't feel like great potential for a horror film. You know, certain franchises like Resident Evil, for example, or, you know, Silent Hill, when you play them, you can imagine them being turned into a film.
Yeah.
Five Nights at Freddy's, it kind of felt like they just did it because the franchise makes a lot of money.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, give me some of that.
I mean, I've just watched, actually, speaking of Silent Hill, I mean, I watched the new one, Return to Silent Hill, Jeremy Irvine, I think his name is. And it is adapted from Silent Hill 2. So that kind of gives you, really, if you played Silent Hill 2, you already know what the plot is for Return to Silent Hill, because the plot's all there. But I was really disappointed, to be honest, because you've got the visuals, which are fantastic. You've got but the horror wasn't there. It's not. It's, how do I put it? It was the weakest of the Silent Hill series, I think, movie series. I mean, the first one wasn't too bad. It was actually pretty good, what we did. The second one, Silent Hill 3D, wasn't very good at all.
No, okay.
And Return to Silent Hill was supposed to be like a soft reboot for the series. But if it's a soft reboot for the series, I think it's not going in the right direction for me, I don't think.
No. Well, I mean, with the Silent Hill games, I feel like a lot of their horror comes from like the atmosphere and the mood that you're setting up. You know, it's not overly reliant on jump scares. It's more the fact that you're in this kind of harsh environment where it feels like everything is out to get you, where it's kind of hard to replicate that feeling from a film just because, you know, we have a bit more disconnect. You know, we're just sat there watching as opposed to interacting with it.
Yes.
So they probably have to rely on stuff like jump scares and things like that a lot more, which isn't really what Silent Hill's all about. And it ends up just feeling like a generic horror film wearing the mask of Silent Hill, maybe.
I mean, have you played any of the Silent Hill games? I mean, which ones have you played? Have you played any of the new ones, or are you more into the classics?
I have never fully finished one. I have played some of the older ones at other people's houses. So I think I've played a little bit of two, then one of the later ones, which I can't remember.
Right.
Because they all start to blend together a little bit later on. But yeah, I remember finding them really quite terrifying when I did use them.
Well, I remember the first time I played Silent Hill was when I was about 9 years old, so you can tell. I mean, that was the first ever horror game I've actually played. And after that, I won't play it again until I was a little bit older. But
it gave you nightmares.
It did give me nightmares. It gave me nightmares for months. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to spoil too much into it, but I always remember this scene where, and I can't really say anything because it will spoil it. There was this scene that creeped me out, and it was a grotesque as well. It was a very gory scene as well.
Yeah.
But I don't want to say too much because I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah.
But it kept me up for ages, and it's like I couldn't even sleep at night. Never mind playing the rest of it.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things which the series really kind of has strengths in. You know, creating this really sort of iconic, disturbing imagery that does stick with you for a while, normally because it's not just shocking for the sake of it, but there's a bit of meaning behind it. You know, like Pyramid Head is the big one who everyone knows from Silent Hill, and I've seen plenty of different people unpacking what Pyramid Head means and, you know, how parts of his design reflect that. And I think that's the same for pretty much all the enemies you encounter throughout most of the games. Maybe not all of them, but certainly for quite a few. I've just seen they've got a new Silent Hill coming out as well, which is first person, which seems really very interesting.
I mean, we've actually played with first person before, and it was called Silent Hill: The Short Message, not very good, because it was only a short game. It was about a 2 hour game, but it was a free game as well. But it played with the idea of a first person game. I mean, it looks great and that, but it wasn't Silent Hill, if you've got to follow me. They tried.
Yeah.
And hopefully they'll do better with this one. I mean, fingers crossed. I'm looking forward. But I think there was also no combat in the short message. It was more focused on exploration and going through this person's story, really. And there is a monster that chases you, but I don't want to obviously go too much into it. Silent Hill F was a huge, goes well away from the series, I think.
Okay.
It was more set in the 1960s.
Yeah.
And I mean, you've got like your fog and you like the creepiness there, but it was, it was so far from the series that it could have been its own IP, really.
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, obviously Silent Hill F is set in Japan, I believe.
Yes.
And I think this new one might be set in the UK. Don't quote me on that, because I'm not 100% sure, but I remember in the trailer seeing some road signs and thinking, oh, they look familiar. They don't look like American ones. But I think, you know, it's good for franchises to try new things, especially when they've been around so long.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you guys remember PT, demo from a while ago.
I was heartbroken about that one. I was so looking forward to that. With Hideo Kojima and Guillermo del Toro and Norman Reedus. Yeah, I was devastated when they cancelled that one.
Yeah, well, it seems like they're kind of maybe trying to bring some of that energy back with this new one, which it seems crazy that they never capitalised on. Because even now, if you look at top horror games of all time, PT will normally be on the list, and it's a demo you can't play anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
So that has got to have made an impact, certainly.
I mean, I found the word that I'm looking for now, but it's a huge breakaway from the series, really. Mm. And I mean, but saying that, it wasn't always about one person's story. It was like multiple stories with multiple characters and that. Mm. So it's like, I mean, you had Harry Mason for the first one, then you had James Sunderland, then you had like Harry Mason's daughter for the in the third one, which is a continuation of the first game, and then you had like someone called Henry Townsend, who was stuck in this in his house and he can't get out, and you've got to try and find a way out to break him out of this apartment. Well, I don't want to say too much into that one, but it's a pretty good game. And that was also first person as well. It was a mixture of first person and third person.
I think, wasn't that the first one to not be set in the town of Silent Hill as well? That kind of had its own setting, some city somewhere, New York probably. Yeah, it's always New York.
I mean, I've just, and when you said Japan for Silent Hill, that was the setting for Silent Hill F, but Silent Hill series is in America, and I think it was set in Maine. In the town of Silent Hill itself, it's called Silent Hill, and that's the actual town. And I think it'll be interesting where the series is going to go from here.
It looks like they're trying some new stuff, so even if it's not a total success, you know, it'll have some more merit to it just from them throwing some balls out and seeing what they can come up with. I think with long-standing series like this, you know, it won't have probably any of the original people from like the original trilogy of games working on anymore, just because of how long it's been and how studios kind of restructure themselves and stuff like that. So I think it's good for new people to try and do new things and bring their own things to it, instead of just trying to replicate what other people did, probably not as well as they did it.
I mean, we were speaking about PT before, and with Hideo Kojima and Norman Reedus, and they eventually made a project themselves. It was called Death Stranding, with with a start, and it was got Guillermo del Toro, Mads Mikkelsen, Leia Sadu. There were quite a few big names in this game. And I've got to be honest, I mean, I was kind of disappointed with what they made, because, and I don't know if you've played it, it's like, it felt to me like it was like...
walking simulator.
It was a walking simulator, but it felt like a scientific version of Postman Pat.
Yeah.
that's what it felt like to me, because...
You drank loads of Monster energy drinks.
You drink a lot of Monster energy drinks, and then not only that, it felt like you were an Amazon courier. You know? I mean, that's what the game felt like, and I thought, this is what the best you came up with, and I thought, I was expecting something, you know, more action-packed than that.
It's weird, because with Kojima games, they're obviously held in such high regard, the Metal Gear series, and now Death Stranding as well.
Yeah.
But I've tried to venture into them a couple of times, because I've had them recommended to me so much, and there's just so many cutscenes in the games.
Yes.
It feels like you're watching almost as much as you are playing, which I know for some people is great, but for me, I like my games to be games.
Yeah, I mean, with Hideo Kojima, I mean, that's always been his thing, really. It's always been like hours and hours and hours of cutscenes. Mm. And, I mean, like you say, you won't really want to get into the game, but, I mean, Metal Gear Solid, I mean, I remember this. The ending cutscene was about nearly 3 hours long.
Just for one cutscene?
Just for one cutscene.
That is mad.
Yeah, and that's to talk about, and it just ties up everything. It ties up all the plot points and all that. But it was so overly long.
Yeah.
And like you said, I mean, it's like you get 10 minutes of gameplay, 10 minutes of gameplay, and 1 hour of cutscenes. Yeah. That's what it felt like. But you kind of expect that with Hideo Kojima. I mean, don't get me wrong, his storytelling is fantastic and all, but like you say, when you're playing a game, you expect to play the game and not watch a film.
There's we were speaking about Alan Wake and Remedy games earlier. They've actually got another one, came out just after the original Alan Wake, called Quantum Break. Don't know if you guys have played it.
I've played it a little bit. I've
I was a bit bored with that one.
Well, one of the big gimmicks of it is there's a TV show that plays in between chapters of the game, like a full live-action TV show, which is kind of affected by choices you've made in the game. And it's an interesting direction for them to go in, but it does just kind of result in, you know, you play this huge action bit, you're all excited, and then you just sort of sat there for 20 minutes watching a kind of cheapy-looking sci-fi show, which isn't as entertaining as the game. And, you know, it's interesting, and I'm glad that people are trying new things, but I do think games are best when they're being games and not when they're being filmed.
It was an interesting concept to look at the start. But I mean, I saw a clip on, I don't know if you two watch it, The Angry Joe Show.
No,
which is like, he's a YouTuber on YouTube. And, well, of course, he's a YouTuber on YouTube, of course he is. But I mean, he does like game reviews and stuff like that. And, I had a look at it called Quantum Break. I mean, the game, it looked fantastic. And then when he showed you a clip of the film, of the cutscene itself, which was live action, it's like, oh, how could you get from a good part of a game to something so boring? And it was boring. It was really, really boring.
They can be quite boring. Luckily, they're only about 20 minutes long each, where I could really imagine them going for a full 45 minutes to give it more prestige.
Yeah.
But I'm glad they stuck to 20. I think the main thing for me is, it feels a bit cheap compared to the game itself. Like, you know, certain effects which look great in the game, like some of the time dilation effects they've got going on, they look brilliant when you're actually playing it, but then when you watch it kind of cheaply CG'd on to some TV show that's clearly, you know, just filmed in some random office that they got access to, it doesn't quite have the same effect. You know, credit to them for trying something new. I think they kind of nailed the mixing of live action and gameplay a bit better with some of their later ones, where they actually incorporate it into the game.
Yeah.
You know, so you'll be walking around and maybe you'll just suddenly get hit by a really quick live action cutscene, but it's almost intended to throw you off a bit. That works great. And maybe they needed, you know, that place to sort of in between place to find the balance. But Yeah, it just didn't work for me as well as it should do.
Yeah, and I mean, I've got to ask you, Lewis and Bradley, actually, I mean, what do you think, where do you feel they can go now with games? I mean, because the graphics now are spot on, top, you know, I mean, you can't, I don't think you can get any better than where we are now. But where do you feel we can go with future of, like, with PlayStation, well, if there's a potential PlayStation 6 and a new Xbox, where do you think we can go with that?
Well, one of the big paths forward would be VR, but I think that does have some fundamental problems with it. Like, cost is a big one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then just room as well. You need quite a lot of room to use VR successfully.
Yeah, yes.
You know, most people just won't have that kind of space to play about with it. And, you know, it can be not that relaxing being in VR sometimes. Some people just want to lie back and enjoy it. But then I think the next thing, other than graphics, is just like, you know, boosting the power of these consoles. So, you know, you can have more NPCs, more particle effects going on, all the other stuff. But even that has surely got to have its limit on, you know.
I bought a PlayStation VR 2. Well, had, should I say. I mean, I've got rid of it now. But I used to have a PlayStation VR 2 thinking they were going to support all the old PlayStation VR games as well. And they didn't do that. They didn't support the old PlayStation VR games. Yeah. They had, it was more, they didn't make any new games for it as well. They've just, basically, I spent £500 on it being just an expensive paperweight, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, there were a couple of games that I did play with it, and it's like, they made like a Horizon Call of a Mountain. But that was like a mountain climbing game. Mm. That was like, you know, there were not much action in that one. Resident Evil, I mean, Resident Evil were really good. I played that on VR. But, I mean, I was a bit disappointed because I was expecting to... I wanted to play Iron Man VR, which came out for the PlayStation VR. But we didn't support it. You've got to play... You got to buy the original PlayStation VR headset to play the original PlayStation VR games, which...
It's almost like trying to get more money out of you, in a way.
Yeah.
And I think also... paying £500, it's, and there's no games, we weren't making any games for it, it's a lot of money to lose.
It is, isn't it? Well, I mean, you ended up selling yours away in the end, so...
Well, I was a bit disappointed, really, because I thought, I was excited to play Iron Man, and, I mean, there was another one, I don't think it came out for PlayStation VR, but, I mean, they made, like, a lot of games, both for MetaQuest. And that was that Batman Arkham Shadow.
Oh, yes.
And that was one of the greatest Batman games they made. And I was hoping they were going to bring it for PS5, but they never did.
No.
So it was a good concept, but I think it's well ahead of its time, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think we just need to wait for it to be more easily accessible to people.
Yeah.
And you know, kind of find what really makes VR gameplay fun, because a lot of stuff is more cool and, you know, it's entertaining for a while, but the effect might wear off, as opposed to, you know, something like Red Dead, where you put like 100 hours into it or something like that. There's a lot of VR games where they're entertaining for about an hour and a half, but then after that you're just a bit bored of it.
And another thing I want to ask as well, because a lot of games now are going digital. They're going on the digital servers instead of discs. I mean, do you feel like there's still a potential for disc-based games, or do you think in future it's gonna be obsolete?
It does seem like they are trying to phase discs out a bit, doesn't it? To me, at least, it does.
Well, because if I remember right, I mean, I remember Doom: The Dark Ages.
Yeah,
they made a disc game for that, but basically, we only on the Blu-ray itself, which is about 50 gigs, 50, 60 gigs, something like that. They put 10 megabytes on the disc.
What?
Yeah. They put 10 megabytes on the disc and you have to download the full game.
Yeah.
So you've got to download the full game, but you can't play it. But you've got to have a really good internet connection to download the full game.
Yeah.
But we only put 10 megabytes on the disc.
It seems silly doing stuff like that as well, especially because for quite a while now we've had, you know, formats where they'll give you multiple discs, so like an installation disc and then a play disc. Or
yes,
I think L.A. Noire had three discs which you would switch between at different parts of the story and stuff.
Last of Us Part Two, like that. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So it just seems crazy that they haven't found a better way to do it. I guess it's maybe production costs. You know, it's a lot cheaper to just put it up online, especially for like smaller indie studios and stuff like that. But yeah, it is a shame. I think a lot of people prefer having the physical stuff that comes with the game, especially if there's like a little map or any, you know, special features that come along with it. It's a shame that we're losing that, really.
And you know what? We could talk about this all day, but unfortunately, we've run out of time. It's quickly come to the end of the show now. I mean, we've got 5 minutes left. I mean, hasn't it flown?
It always flies.
It always flies when you're here, doesn't it? I mean, I want to say thank you, Lewis. Thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's been a lot of fun.
And, yeah, I mean, welcome to the team, by the way.
Yeah, thank you.
Welcome to the team. And, I mean, we're going to play our last song now of the day. So we're going to play another Duran Duran song, and this is called Invisible.
Blame. Has the memory gone? Are you feeling?